now.
Thank you so very much. Good morning, everyone. I'm Dr. Stephen Holt, and I have the privilege of facilitating the Bond Oversight Committee meeting on this Thursday, August 4th, 2022. Thanks and welcome into our first hybrid meeting. It is our first gathering whereby we've got some people in person, and then we have others who are joining us like me via the web. So I appreciate you being in the space today. It's going to be a little unique because of the dynamics of working through all the pieces of controlling, keeping things together and trying to make sure we're capturing what is said and how it's said. So I appreciate your patience as we're going through the process. Well, there you go. Our hybrid meeting protocols and tips. Please be patient and respectful. And so I'm going to do my best to facilitate the process by capturing those who virtually are interacting or interacting from the virtual zone and those who are in the space. And so I appreciate that you're thoughtful in regard to that. Check your speakers and your microphone. I think we've done that. Make sure they're working properly. And speaking clearly and maybe a little slower than normal. Not extremely slow. We're not asking you to draw out your words, but also not to speak too rapidly where we would miss what you're saying. So try to be conscious of that. We want to make sure we're capturing all that's communicated. And then that you mute your microphone when you aren't speaking. That you keep mindful of that if you're not talking and you begin to talk to someone on the side and your mic is not muted, it then will pick up the conversation and create a tone challenge, also the potential of feedback. So make sure you keep your mic muted. And then we'd like to keep side conversations minimized, period, so that you're engaged in all of this incredible information we're gonna be going over. So you'll wanna lean in. And introduce yourself before speaking. This is different. Some of us do it on a regular basis who live in this world, of the virtual world, and we're constantly engaged in meetings. Others of us don't think about it because we're not doing it as much. We're going to ask you to introduce yourself, even if you are well known and highly regarded, like the Bond Oversight Committee themselves. So ask you to introduce yourself. And then virtual attendees, you can use the chat for tech questions and for public testimony. So it's a little different. It's a little unique to today's meeting, but I am confident that we will work through it seamlessly. That's my anticipation. So welcome in to the place, and I am going to begin with roll call. So Susan.
Susan Emmons. I use she, her pronouns, a Bond Oversight Committee member, and I'm attending in person today.
Good to see you, Susan. Todd?
Todd is not with us today.
Okay, I don't see him. All right. Alan?
Good morning, everyone. Alan Lazo from the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. I use he, him pronouns, and I am appearing today in the virtual space. Good to see you all. Wish I could be there.
Good to see you, too. And then Annalise.
Good morning, everyone. Annalisa Curler, Portland Housing Bond Oversight Committee member. I use she, her pronouns, and I am here virtually.
Wonderful. I believe that covers our Bond Oversight Committee. Excellent. Let's go to our minutes from our last meeting, April 7th. I don't know if we need to take a moment to look over the minutes or if the Bond Oversight Committee has had a chance to read through and if someone's ready to recommend accepting or adjusting.
Susan has her hand up.
I reviewed the minutes. I thought they were complete and accurate, and I'd make a motion that we accept them.
Thank you, Susan. Any second?
Yeah, I'll second. This is Alan Lazo. I'll second.
So it's been moved and seconded. All in favor, I'm just going to call you one at a time, of accepting the minutes as recorded. Use the signifier I. Susan.
Aye.
Alan.
Aye.
Annalise.
Aye.
Perfect. So minutes have been accepted. At this point, we have a moment for public testimony. Do you have a slide that communicates some of that? Thank you. Our public testimony affords 2 minutes per person. And again, we offered the chat as an option for public testimony. We would like you to keep your comments to today's agenda and concerns related to what is being covered, provided there are items of concern and things you need to dialogue beyond the topics of today. We encourage you to reach out to the staff of the Portland Housing Bureau. You can sign up in person, or you can identify in the chat room, the Zoom chat, that you would like to give testimony. Verbal or written testimony, again, the chat feature, or you can submit via email a written testimony. Having given that description, is there anyone signed up for public testimony?
I think we had a couple people signing up, yeah.
That was... yeah, I sent it to you and Dr.
Looks like we, at least on the registration, Dr. Holt, we had a couple people signing up. I'm not sure if they're with us. Kim Nguyen and Thomas Busey.
Kim, are you in the space? Hearing no response. Thomas, are you in the space?
Have Travis Phillips and Matt Cunningham.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the first name.
Travis Phillips and Matt Cunningham.
Okay, Travis, are you in the space?
Dr. Holt, they might not be with us. These are two of our presenters later on today. So
gotcha.
They may have signed up erroneously, but and I know that they will be joining us if they're not here already.
That often happens when there's a presenter who's not familiar with the format. They'll, in the registering for the meeting, will check to give public testimony, thinking that that is accomplishing their responsibility and or assignment for the meeting. So we will move forward. We're going to do some bond updates. We're going to talk about our project milestones. And Jill Chen, you're going to review that for us, after which we'll do the quarterly expenditure report, and Anhel will lead that conversation. So, Jill.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. For the record, I'm Jill Chen, Housing Investments and Portfolio Preservation Manager of PHB. And I apologize for everybody. I misplaced my order of my slides, so I'm going to ask to go to slide 8 first. Yeah, the issues and the risk. The reason I wanted to start off with issues and risk is it colors all of the update about our pre-development and our construction and those that are in the sub. So I highlighted these as some key issues that we're seeing in our projects. And just for the committee's information, we have almost $700 million in total project costs in pre-development. And in construction is over $500 million of construction. So it's about $1.2 billion worth of projects that are in some form of construction or pre-development. So the issues and the risk impacts both areas. The first one is the private activity bonds continue to be constrained through 2024. I think I mentioned last time about private activity bonds and the importance of private activity bonds to the creation of 4% low-income housing tax credits. This, fortunately for us, does not impact the projects that are already in construction, and that is from our 2019 bond opportunity solicitation. The private activity bonds, however, do impact two of our projects in pre-development. Alder 9 already has private activity bonds. However, Francis Clare and Barbara Apartments do not. So this will impact how quickly they can move forward and when they will get the private activity bonds. The second issue is cost escalation of about 1% per month. What that translates to is about $150,000 to $250,000 of cost increase every month that a project is delayed. So when we think about private activity bonds and the cost escalation and the uncertainty of that, it just creates a lot of, you can call it angst. The third issue we're facing is the continued supply chain, sort of subcontractor staffing issues. It has created some, you can call it some delays in our projects that are in construction as it relates to when those will reach temporary certificate of occupancy. It could be anything from, wood not being, lumber not being available as quickly as needed, or certain, staff or construction not being available. What we've seen in other projects that are in the pipeline, these are primarily the metro projects, is that it is impacting our subcontractors. In particular, the subcontractors are extremely busy. Instead of having more than two or three bids, you'll just get one bid, which means you may not get the best pricing, or you may not get as much of your certified contractors. So our equity in contracting, our DMWSB numbers may not be as good as we are hoping because they're all so busy right now. So what does this really mean is that in many cases, our funding gaps in our projects have become completely, in some ways crazy, exacerbated. In our projects, we are seeing that on a rough rule, probably about 15% gaps. So it's huge. And they're not necessarily being filled by low-income housing tax credits because of the constraints of private activity bonds. And the last maybe is a great idea, a great issue because of the multiple openings of projects. Just for everybody's information, we have 220 units of PSH opening this year. It's fascinating, it's wonderful, I'm so thrilled, but that also has created some difficulties in terms of 180 units of PSH will actually be an opening in a span of 6 weeks timeframe. I think this is more compressed than we have ever seen. And that is stressing our whole referral system as well. That time will come in October when, let me just make sure I got the names right. The West Wing will open, the Evans Place South Project will open, and the Hattie Redmond will open. So in total, that's 180 PSH units. Fantastic, but it is creating some issues as well.
And Jill, this is Tanya Wolfersberger. The Hattie Redmond, just for the group's notice, is a Metro Bond project.
Right. So it's also PSH. So I just wanted to make sure that everyone is aware of these are the risks and the issues that we are working with our partners in trying to make sure we can resolve it. I wanted to make sure we set the stage before we go into specific updates. Do you want to just pull up the dashboard? So I'll go through the dashboard first. Sorry. So what we have here is the project bond update report. And you'll see that most of this is, you have all seen it, is in the construction. Most of our projects are in construction. But the good news is we're opening more and more projects so that you'll see that the green and the sort of darker blue will shift and the light blue will flip. For those of you who may have the big sheet of paper that has the project progress dashboard, you'll see that in the notes, there's a number of highlighted notes. So on our projects in pre-development, Alder 9 and Francis Clare both have gaps. Alder 9 being a much larger project, have a much bigger gap. As I mentioned in the report, it's a funding gap of 5.7 million. So we are working with them to go and apply for OHCS funding through market cost offset funds. We're working with them to see, you know, apply for clean energy funds, Portland clean energy funds, and they're also requesting additional support. So we're all in the process of working through that. Similarly, Francis Clare has a small funding gap of about $1 million, working through that as well. We're working also trying to figure out Barber Apartments. Barber Apartments have a $9 million plus gap in which they applied to OHCS LIT for, and they were notified just this week that they did not receive the LIT funds. So we're going to be speaking with them about what are some of their thoughts as well as ours. So I think those are the three projects that are, you can call it, greatest risk because they're in pre-development. A number of other items I did want to highlight. We have a grand opening at Cathedral Village on September 20th. And I want to invite all the bond oversight committee members. It will be a big celebration between 2:30 and 4:30. Some other notes, some of our projects that are in construction actually received additional funding. So that's some great news. The Joyce received some additional over $500,000 from OHCS, or Market Cost Offset Fund. And the Anna Mann with IHI, their appeal to the National Park Services for historic tax credits were accepted. So they got historic tax credits, and that's great news. It will help them sort of do the stuff and potentially for us to have some of our bonds back, returned back. So fingers crossed. Let's see, I think you all have seen this slide before about the wonderful work that our partners have done. And the fact that, you know, we are, all I can say is, it's great to see that we have achieved so much more than what the citizens asked us for. Next slide. Great. In looking forward, we have a number of openings, and in total, throughout the city, it's 587 units. The first one that has already opened is Crescent Court, that opened in May. And that's 138 units. Hyatt Tulixum and Cathedral Village will both open in August. Hyatt Tulixum is 50 units and Cathedral Village is 110. And then there is a, like I mentioned, the Evans Place South building with PSH, which is 48 units, and Westwind, or from Starlight, which is formerly Westwind, with 100 units, of which 70 is PSH. That's in October, both of those. And the last one in December is Las Adelitas with 141 units. So those are some of the, you can see sort of the visual. Next slide, please. The rest of the buildings will be opening in 23-24. That's Aurora in February with 93 units. The Joyce, which is another PSH, is 66 units in April. And in May, we have two, which is Emmons Place North Building and Anna Mann with 128. Emma's Place North Building, 98. And then 3000 Powell slipped a month from December, and they'll now open in January 2024, and that's 206. So without further ado, I hand it over to my colleague, Angel, for the finance report. Do you want to go for questions now?
We're running a little behind schedule. Yes, Dr. Holt, I'll give it over to you.
Thank you very much. I was just going to say it would be great to open it up to any questions or comments from the Oversight Committee. I understand that we're, time challenged, but any questions or comments, Annalise?
No, none for me. This has been a really great overview of understanding the exciting opportunities in front of us, as well as the current challenges.
Thank you very much. Alan?
Well, thanks, Dr. Holt. I just had a quick question about, I hope it's quick, about our, Jill, I really appreciate this sense of, around talking about issues and risks. If you talk about pre-development phase of all these projects, the total is about $1.2 billion, but we've got a smaller percentage of that that is at risk for the actual bond, right? And so we often talk about the projects in their totality, but the exposure of the bond itself is significantly smaller than that. So what is the, it's just the three projects in pre-development then, and the two that have a funding gap have some potential exposure there. Is that, am I characterizing that right?
Yes, and I should just clarify, Alan, the $1.2 billion, over half a billion is in construction. So that risk is mitigated. In terms of construction risk or cost increase risk. It's the pre-development that PHB sees, and it's really in the pre-development of the three Alder 9, Francis Clear, and Barber apartments that are sort of, you can call it, at risk.
Okay.
So you're correct.
Yeah, thank you. And so my point, I think, and that looks like it's about $150 million in total project cost across that pre-development phase, of which the bond funds we have invested there are about 450,000?
No, our total investments in the bonds.
Well, in pre-development.
Oh, pre-development, yes. It's not much because we've only provided, it's right now about 2 million because we provided a $1 million pre-development loan to Alder 9. And I believe we're working on a Francis Clear pre-development loan. We have not granted a pre-dev loan to Barber Apartments because the gap is so large.
Okay, thank you.
And we're waiting for the lift decision.
Thanks, Al.
Yeah.
Susan, comments, questions?
Yeah, very exciting report. My question or just statement about the 180 PSH units opening in such a short time frame. My understanding from the organizations that are working on these buildings is that they've staffed up and they're pre-screening people in preparation.
Yep.
It's still a big lift, but I think there's a lot of planning going on and as it's spread across organizations to make sure that they have people screened and ready.
Yeah, I think there's having people screened, ready, and also working with Home Forward to make sure that the project-based Section 8s are available and they have gone through that and received their rental support. We've been working, Jennifer, myself, the joint office team and the Home Forward team has been having monthly meetings on this.
Any follow-up, Susan, at all? Is that?
No, I think that's right. Sounds great.
Excellent. Thanks, Jill. We will go on to Angel.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Awesome. So my name is Angel Landron Gonzalez. I'm the finance and accounting manager for the Portland Housing Bureau. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm Latino. So let's go over the expenditure report highlights as of June 30th of 2022. So the expended versus committed amounts have continued increasing on ongoing constructions. Compared with the previous report, the project spending has increased by 26.7 million, equivalent to 10.16%, and the commitments have increased by 30 million, equal to 11.45%. The reserve remains at 167,000, and the net interest and credits at 2.28 million are planned to be used for future projects. So after that, I can get it back to Dr. Holt.
Thanks, Angel. I'm gonna go as I just did through the committee and ask if there are any questions or comments. Susan, beginning with you.
I don't have any questions.
Thank you. Annalise, oh, right as you take a drink, right?
Totally fine. I don't have any questions either. This was pretty clear, thank you.
Alan?
Yeah, I don't have any questions at this point either. Thanks, Dr. Holt.
Thank you. Excellent. Well, we will keep moving forward with our next section, project team presentations, Starlight, Central City Concern, and then Francis plus Claire Place. Let me say this. I know, Tanya, you're going to run us through it. We have roughly gone over about 8 minutes. I'm not asking people to rush, but be concise, please, in your commentary. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. Hi again, everyone. I'm Tanya Wolfersberger with PHB, she, her pronouns. I just want to just start us out and introduce our project teams. We've invited two teams to come and present to us today, two projects that are at different phases. One is the Starlight project, which is about to open in a few months. And then you'll hear from the team for Francis Clare Place, which is in pre-development, one of our three that received an award most recently. So a little bit different templates and formats for these presentations, but I'm really excited that these two teams are able to join us today and give us some updates on what's going on with these projects. So I will hand it over first to the team for the Starlight project. I think we have Brandon and Mary Rain joining us. So I will guide your slides at your command.
Great, thank you and good morning. Thanks for having us this morning. My name is Brandon Brezik. I'm the development project manager with Central City Concern. And I'm joined by my colleague, Mary Rain. I'll let her introduce herself.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us here today. We're excited to provide this update regarding the Starlight. I'm Mary Rain O'Mara. I use she, her pronouns, Senior Director of Community Development at Central City Concern.
Great. Yeah, we're here to talk about the Starlight, formerly the West Wind, and it's located on Northwest 6th and Flanders in Old Town. And Tanya, can you go to the next slide? So CCC is serving as the developer and owner and will be property manager of this property as well. We have an external service partnership with NARA, the Native American Rehabilitation Association. CCC will also be serving as a general supportive services provider, in addition to providing culturally specific services for African Americans through CCC's Imani Center, Flip the Script, and Karibu programs. We are scheduled for an October 25th substantial completion, as well as ongoing lease-up activities are currently ongoing. We just met with Joe's for our lease-up kickoff on the 27th of July, working through our MOU with NARA and Joe's. We have ongoing hiring for supportive services staff, as well as building staff, and we'll begin referral screenings at the end of August. We have a tentative November 15th date for our formal grand opening event. Next slide. The building is seven stories with 100 units, 72 SROs, and 28 studios. Eight of the studios are what we refer to as fair market units, restricted at 60% AMI, but we'll be leasing them at 50% AMI. This more affordable rent level is more achievable for our residents, as 60% rents for efficiency studios like this can often approach market rent levels. 70% of the SRO units will be supported by project-based vouchers through Home Forward for residents with no income to extremely low income, where the tenant's portion of the rent is capped at 30% of their income. Our target population is chronically homeless, as well as African-American and Native American and Alaska Natives, with 20 of the voucher units set aside for NARA's clients and 20 set aside for CCC's African-American serving programs. The remaining units will be non-voucher units rented to folks with incomes under 30% AMI. Our on-site amenities on the space will be a resident art space. We've got ample on-site bike parking, a private courtyard, a fitness room, large community kitchen, resident lounges on every floor, flexible classroom space, and 24-hour staffing through CCC. And you can see some of the pictures there on the right, some renderings of what the interior will look like. Design features on the building, we're targeting an Earth Advantage Platinum certification, and we're on track for that. We upgraded during the course of construction to a 40 kilowatt photovoltaic solar array. We have 8 ADA units for mobility impaired and hearing impaired persons. As well as taking advantage of the central commercial zoning. We have no on-site auto parking, and we're right along the MAX line, the green and yellow line. So next slide. And I'll pass this off to Mary Rain to touch on.
Thank you, Brandon. Yes, very timely, as we were hearing from the panel discussion earlier, committee discussion regarding this exciting influx of new PSH units via the investments coming to fruition. So we are very excited to be partnering with the joint office. 70 of the units are coordinated access direct referrals. We've held several meetings with the joint office and our service partners, and we're also in very good communication with Home Forward. This project will involve many partners coming together to make sure that the lease up is smooth, and we are fully utilizing our 6-month timeline to make sure that we're getting all 70 of the PSH units filled with the eligible tenants. So you see here are three strategies. Again, coordinated access being the primary strategy for the 70 coordinated access referral units. And then we do have the set aside of 40 units for culturally specific referrals. So those partners are also working closely with joint office to make sure that their clients are on the coordinated access list and will be essentially rising to the top as we undergo this lease-up process. And then we're also in conversation with joint office and our partners around somewhat of a pilot approach to geographically specific outreach here in Old Town. We have, as everyone knows, continue to have a concentration of chronic homelessness here in Old Town. So to the extent that we can dovetail our outreach efforts to find folks that fit into these other categories or can be referred to the coordinated access system during initial lease up and ongoing, we would like to take the opportunity to make a little bit of a targeted outreach approach here in the neighborhood. Next
Great. Slide. Thanks, Mary.
And we're ready for the next slide.
So with that, our general contractor for this project is Walsh Construction Company, and we're working with Works Progress Architects, which is a women-owned business enterprise, as well as GLI Advisors, as a third-party construction manager. As of the end of last month, we were at about 71-72% complete construction. So if you go by the building, there's an entire building, siding's up, and we're working down from the top on the interiors. So regarding our equitable contracting goals and outcomes, our hard cost contracts are just exceeding the 30% goal at 31.65%, and our professional services and soft costs goal, we've pretty significantly succeeded at 52%. with MWESB contracts. Next slide. So regarding apprentice level and journey level tradespeople on site, our apprentice level hours for people of color and women pretty significantly exceed the PHB goals, with 39% POC apprentice and then 13.5% women apprentice level trades. And then regarding journey level hours, we've pretty significantly exceeded the POC goals for journey level trades. And we're just under the women journey level trades. And we're actually, just an update on that element. We're gonna be getting a new apprentice, or excuse me, a new journey level finished carpenter on site with Walsh RDF. So that should help boost that number a little bit. And then also wanted to highlight Julie and Xavier, who are pictured here. They came out of the Constructing Hope program. Constructing Hope is a nonprofit organization that is a pre-apprentice program that helps folks that are low income, coming out of incarceration, coming out of homelessness and addiction, get into the trades. Julie and Xavier were graduates of this program. Julie is now our site forewoman with Walsh RDF, and Xavier is also with RDF. Both have been working on the Starlight in various capacities. And it's just an awesome program that was highlighted. There was a video that came out, and in the presentation I sent over to Tanya, the logo is linked to a great video. If you get a chance, I highly recommend checking it out. Just an awesome partnership and highlighting the great work that Walsh has done and what's contributing to the Starlight's construction. Next slide. And I'll let Marion take this one as well.
Thank you. So a recap of our design engagement activities, and then I'll talk about just how we've kept that engagement going to current day. So during the design, we did do targeted outreach and engagement with the Old Town Community Association, the Neighborhood and Business Association here in Old Town. We did outreach to our tenant advisory committee here at CCC, which is comprised of residents of many of our buildings throughout Portland, and then maintained regular updates and engagement with our neighbors surrounding the building. As we've mentioned, our service partnerships include NARA and our culturally specific African American serving programs here at CCC. So those partners have all been engaged ongoing with design, service design, and now, as I mentioned, engaged with the lease up and referral strategy for the building as it nears opening. In terms of what we heard that we were able to pull through into the design, we heard from the neighborhood that a ground floor community commercial amenity that could be focused on access to food would be important. And so we were able to carve out approximately 1,000 square feet on the ground floor that we are looking for a food related tenant to come into the building and provide that service more broadly to the neighborhood. We heard from residents that an outdoor space, an exercise space, we have provided a gym within the building, would be important as people exit homelessness and continue their journey towards healing. We also heard about, for the single room occupancies, I can keep going even though this slide went down, that an ability to cook, right? And so small kitchenettes have been added to the design. For each of the single room occupancy units in the building. So in terms of, you know, just how we've kept that all flowing, again, we've continued to engage throughout the process. And now as we near opening, we are excited to be able to demonstrate how we've been able to pull those themes through in terms of the amenities and the features that we heard from the community would be important.
I hate to interrupt. We've got about 3 minutes left.
Okay, next slide, please.
All All right. Thank you, everyone, for letting us come and update you on the Starlight. We're ready for any questions you may have.
I will take the committee through the process of identifying the name and then giving you an opportunity. Annalise.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Holt. I am actually curious if you guys can speak a little bit more to the kind of geographic location, like wanting to serve people directly in Old Town. I haven't seen that strategy that often before. So just kind of speaking to why you decided on that and how it interacts with the other strategies. I think it was like three slides ago.
Happy to speak to that a little bit more. Sorry to jump in, Brandon. Feel free to add if I miss any relevant points. Really the concept was brought to us by the joint office. And they asked if we would be willing to sort of pilot, right? We're not necessarily officially making this eligibility criteria, but to the extent that we as CCC can utilize our outreach team and through our partners, think about a strategy where we can do outreach for people living in homelessness here in Old Town and point them to, hey, here's how you get on the coordinated access list. And really not just about the Starlight opening, but in general, right? I think this is an important opportunity to do a little bit more targeted outreach so that we're letting people know, right? Housing opportunity is available to you if you follow these steps and get yourself on the coordinated access list. So again, not really an official criteria, but something that we're wanting to pilot and see if we can make some impact through the project opening.
Thank you, Annalise. Alan.
Thank you, Dr. Holt. I don't have any questions, but just a quick comment on and thanks for the presentation. I think that particularly the community engagement update slide really highlights connecting kind of the target populations, the priority populations for the bond and the outcomes that you all are seeing. So really thank you for the work that y'all are doing.
Thanks, Alan. Susan.
Great presentation, exciting project. I had a question about how you're heating and cooling the system, because I know another building's putting in a heat pump, which means the smaller units will have air conditioning. I was thrilled to hear that. And I wondered if you're doing anything like that with the Starlight.
Yeah, so design was mostly through permitting when the 2021 heat wave came through and the wildfire smoke as well in 2020. So what we ended up doing to accommodate the new PHB requirements for cooling was we beefed up the in-unit electrical capacity, as well as we're going to be investing in portable AC units, because only tempered common area cooling and tempered air in the units was kind of where we landed at permitting, and to go and add a full HVAC in-unit system would have been I just think not feasible given where we were in pre-development and starting construction. We're going to be giving portable AC units and window ports for the window setups that we have. So that's how we're handling it. But yeah, as you mentioned, we're doing a centralized heat pump system in one of our current under construction or under pre-development projects. That's probably a path that we're going to be going and with mini splits and other units as well.
Thank you very much, Central City. Appreciate the presentation and very well done within our time frame. I appreciate it. Thanks for being concise. I will now move it to the next presenters with the same instruction. You've got about 10 to 12 minutes to present so we can give room for questions. So, Francis and Claire.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. My name is Mac Cunningham, and I am a member of Catholic Charities Community Development and Housing Team. And I'm here today with my colleague, Travis Phillips, and Jill Sherman from Evelyn & Company. We're happy to present you all an update on one of our forthcoming developments, Francis and Claire Place. First, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Catholic Charities, we provide a wide array of services for our clients, including, but not limited to, migration services, financial empowerment and planning, behavioral health and intercultural counseling, as well as housing and homelessness services, which we'll focus in on a little bit here today. Caritas Housing, though, is the housing arm of Catholic Charities. We operate all over the state. Currently, Caritas has over 400 units of affordable housing throughout the city of Portland, with more in development, both in the city of Portland and throughout the metro area and state. Francis and Claire Place, though, which we're here to talk about today, will be located at roughly Southeast 11th and Stark on the St. Francis of Assisi Parish campus in the Buckman neighborhood of Southeast Portland. And it will be adjacent to St. Francis Park Apartments, which is also a Catholic Charities property. Next, please. Francis and Claire Place will feature 61 units of permanent supportive housing with wraparound services, restricted to those who are earning 30% of area median income or lower. The unit mix will primarily be studios with 7 one-bedroom apartments. All units will have rental assistance to ensure that no resident pays more than 30% of their income in rent to ensure that rents are affordable. At this time, we anticipate housing between 61 and 68 residents, and we'll refine this number as we get closer to lease up. Services will be provided by Catholic Charities, as well as the Native American Rehabilitation Association, otherwise known as NARA. We will have staff on site 24/7 and provide residents with case managers and peer support specialists in addition to resident services that Catholic Charities offers at all of our properties. If residents need services which are not provided by Catholic Charities or NARA, those will be made via referrals and will support residents in accessing those services. Throughout the development of this project, and as we prepare for lease up down the road, we have had and will continue to focus our outreach to communities who are overrepresented in the homeless and houseless population in the area surrounding Francis and Claire Place, which according to recent point in time counts include those who identify as Native American or Indigenous and Black or African American. Next, please. Before I dive into the project financing, I'd like to point out our proposed site plan at the bottom right corner of the slide, showing where Francis and Claire Place will sit in relation to Francis and Claire Commons and the existing St. Francis of Assisi Church, which will remain on site. With a total project cost of just over $24.5 million, financing for Francis and Claire Place is provided by the following sources: about $8.4 million in Portland housing bond funding, over $10.7 million in low-income housing tax credit equity, nearly $3 million via permanent loan, and $275,000 in grants. Please forgive the rounding error. Other sources not pictured, though, include SDC waivers, deferred and recontributed developer fee, and a construction loan. As you can see on the slide, currently have a gap of roughly $152,000, which we are working to address via a variety of strategies, which include getting more grant funding. Our estimate above of $275,000 is based on a very conservative estimate of what we could be awarded via Metro's TOD program and Oregon's multifamily energy program. We're also working to see if we can increase our LIHTC pricing. We're currently in preliminary discussions with an investor to get a letter of intent, which would increase our tax credit pricing by roughly 1.5 cents. In addition, we're also looking at applying for Portland Clean Energy funding. In preparation for applying for this funding, we're engaging a solar consultant to review the feasibility of adding solar to the project scope, in addition to other design choices, which could increase the sustainability of the building. Overall, though, funding via the Portland Housing Bond is being leveraged roughly 3 times to support this development. Next slide, please. Currently, we are in pre-development and reaching about the 50% design development point, and that is set to be issued in the coming days. We are super fortunate as well, though, to have a super strong team for this development, which is being designed by our architect, Pulse Architecture, It will be built by our general contractor, O'Neill Walsh Community Builders, who is also the general contractor for the adjacent St. Francis Park Apartments. Development support is being provided by Edelin & Company, with wraparound services provided by Catholic Charities and NARA, who has also assisted with our engagement. Last but not least, we're also partnering with Afro Village, who has assisted with engagement and will be a referral partner. Leading up to this presentation, we've already had our early assistance and design advice request meetings with the City of Portland. And in the coming months, we will be submitting for a land use and design review application in September, submitting for building permits in November. O'Neill Walsh will begin requesting bids starting next March, with a financial closing and start of construction in June 2023. And we're estimating roughly 12 months for construction. From here though, I'm gonna pass things on over to Travis. And next slide.
Thanks, Mac. So just a couple notes that I wanted to offer up to you for changes that you may notice from prior versions of this project that were presented in our application and that you may have seen at previous stages. So a couple things here. The design of the property, we actually flipped the building to face Southeast 11th, whereas prior versions had shown facing Southeast 12th. This was really done to respond to some of the priorities of the parish to retain their existing facilities there and how we could best accomplish that. The outdoor courtyard that we'd shown on the prior site plan actually will be encompassed where the parish's existing parking is. That was a high priority for them to retain since we're in the Central City District. No new surface parking is allowed. And so we wanted to preserve what they already had for their parish members, but knowing that that's not strongly utilized most of the week, which is currently largely pervious paving there, will potentially remain available for green space when it's not needed for other uses. As well, there's green space at our existing St. Francis Park Apartments next door, and in the Francis and Clare Commons between the two buildings that'll definitely be available to residents, and we actually look forward to them utilizing more. And then just related to fitting everything in the building and on the site, we did a little swap in reducing the one bedroom units by three and increasing the number of studio units by three. So it's the same number of units that we'd proposed in our initial application, but just a slight switch in terms of the type of units. We can move on to the next slide. So a couple things. You heard Mac talk about our general contractor, O'Neill Walsh Community Builders. Really excited to have them work with us on this project. We really selected them based on their alignment with our goals, as well as their performance and commitment on the St. Francis Park Apartments that we opened a few years ago. Currently, we're tracking over 90% for COBID certified firms for professional services, thanks to our partners at Holst for really embracing our commitment there and leaning into that very strongly. As well as the other professional services that we've contracted on the owner side. So pretty excited about those numbers and the opportunity there. Those are largely minority and women-owned firms, just for the record. I would also just note in terms of O'Neill Walsh's confidence in the ability to meet the COBID goals that were in our application, we continue to work with them and just appreciate that partnership with O'Neill as a minority and women-owned firm, as well as just their incredible willingness to lean into workforce representation, apprenticeship opportunities, and not just meeting the check the box goals, but really looking at how we support our minority and women-owned firms in that work. So excited to say we're still tracking very strongly in that regard. Moving on to the next slide. So just want to highlight a couple of issues, challenges here. And I think from what you heard Mac say earlier, we're moving ahead smoothly. But as we are looking to, you know, create additional housing opportunity on the site there adjacent to the church, took some creative work in our early assistance meetings and with the city of Portland to identify exactly how we could create the new legal tax lot that the housing would sit on and actually preserve what the church needed within their existing lot. You've heard this from everybody, I'm sure, but increases in construction costs and interest rates are definitely a challenge for everybody in our industry right now, and we haven't been immune to that, though we certainly have had a very close eye on how we mitigate those challenges and make sure that those don't prevent us from moving forward smoothly. And sort of related to construction costs as well, it's a very busy construction environment still. And both on the professional services side and with subcontractors, really getting that responsiveness, you know, has required a lot of extra effort on our part. And I think, and by our part, I mean our entire team, not just Catholic Charities, but also the Holst team, the O'Neill Walsh team. And I think we'll continue to need to put a lot of work in there. And I think we'll see. Potentially, you know, that's one of the things that has impacted construction cost is it is the market is in the favor of the people doing the work right now, which is both great for them, but also challenging when we're trying to keep our costs under under caps for the project. We can move on to the next slide.
Travis, I hate to interrupt. We've got about 2 minutes.
Perfect. I got about 2 minutes left here. So thank you. Mac highlighted a little bit of this in terms of the partners who are working with us for engagement on this project, but really had a strong community advisory group that led a visioning process before we'd even submitted the application for this project, and really wanted to be responsive to the needs and challenges in the neighborhood, and also make sure that this was a welcoming neighborhood for a population that not all neighborhoods are particularly welcoming on. And we really got a lot of alignment with folks who are already in the community, Central East Side Industrial Council, folks who had experienced homelessness, the Buckman Community Association. Appreciate that folks from the joint office and other agencies joined us for this, and really tried to come up with a program for the development that was well aligned with all of the community needs and desires. And then have continued on that with focus groups, both in that advisory group and in that advisory work and since, with folks who've experienced homelessness, including in the neighborhood, residents of existing Catholic Charities properties, including at St. Francis Park next door, and clients of NARA and Afro Village. That's been really great, both in terms of feedback on the design and amenities, but also how we can ensure that the property is serving and connecting with those folks to meet those goals. And then just finally to close things out, noting that we plan to continue that engagement as we continue to move forward.
Fantastic. Thank you so very much. With 12 seconds left. Susan, comments, questions?
Just thank you for the presentation. I don't have any questions, but I look forward to seeing this being developed and tracking the progress.
Thank you very much. Alan?
Thanks, Dr. Holt, and thanks for the team from Catholic Charities. I had a comment first just about, again, how grateful I am to the teams that have put these together and looking at how different the processes are and the needs that you all are meeting, but all working towards the same goal, and how remarkable it is in each of the projects, how that shows up. So really appreciate that. I did have a question. I don't know if this is for Mac or maybe for Jill. There must be an update on the funding gap, because I think we show a funding gap in our, in your chart, Jill, of 875. And then on the Catholic Charities, they show it closed now to 150. So there must've been potentially an update there.
Yes, I think that is just a timing issue, and also our team has not had the latest numbers from the Francis and Claire team. So I'm thrilled that they whittled it down to 150,000. That's easy.
Yeah, I think, thanks, Jill. That definitely has been a factor of just the moving targets and timing of getting information to who it needs to get to in the time in advance, so you can get all your meeting materials prepared. Jill Sherman, did you want to maybe just give a couple of the highlights on how we've identified reductions in that gap?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Hi, everyone. I'm Jill Sherman with Edlin and Co. The biggest thing is we were able to, working with PHV, increase the development fee to the maximum allowed by the state, by OHCS, which is 18%, and then contribute back the difference, which increases our eligible basis for tax credits and thereby increases the tax credits to the project. So just to be clear, it shows up as both a source and a use. There's no additional cash fee being proposed to Catholic Charities, but it does directly reduce the gap. And as you can see, in a not insignificant way, that's probably the biggest change.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. No, I don't have any questions. Just really grateful to have this presentation and all of these presentations and continue to see the progress that we're making.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for the updates. Appreciate the work. Have a great rest of your Thursday. We will go back to our outline, Mac, Travis. Travis, good to see you.
Thank you all. You too.
And now we've got a update. If you would bring up that slide. There we go.
I don't have any slides particularly with interim director updates, but
yes, that was the slide I was looking for that says interdirectors update. And I thought it was a good way of introducing Molly. So I was waiting for the slide.
I first wanted to thank our presenters who joined us today and shared some tremendous progress, different phases at each department, but housing equity and contracting goals, the programming and services, and really going a long way in terms of addressing our chronic homelessness crisis. So thank you for that. Wanted to also mention, so I was recently appointed the interim director just all of last week at the Portland Housing Bureau. Wanted to spend a moment sharing with you how honored I am that the Commissioner Ryan has asked me to serve in this role. It is a stewardship role as the Commissioner conducts a national search for a permanent director. We don't know how long that will take, but we have fabulous staff here and we have fabulous partnerships with you all to continue the momentum and all the programs we have put in place, not just with the Portland Housing Bond, but all the COVID related work we've done and incredible investments to keep people in their homes in the last couple of years. I just wanted to make sure we have a moment to acknowledge Shannon Callahan, the director of all her, integral to the creation of the Portland Housing Bond. And that really is her legacy. Everything from crafting language on the ballot to creating a governance structure, a la this oversight committee, which has shepherded, provided accountability for us all these many years. It's been 5.5 years since we have all been working together. Everything from ensuring we had some early projects to annual solicitations and really moving the needle of increasing the affordable housing and rental supply in the city, as well as doing any opportunities to expand deeply affordable housing and be more responsive and permanent supportive housing. We are very close to meeting our 2000 overall city county goal now as a result of the Portland Housing Bond, in addition to other bond measures. It's a huge a lift that, anyway, that Director Callahan, former Director Callahan had left for us, but I wanted to assure everyone that our incredible staff have honed our systems, and we have a lot of projects underway that we are committed to continuing to see come to fruition. Very exciting to think of us of only three outstanding projects that have not reached financial close, 3 out of 15, just as a way of looking at some of the metrics there. We have 1490 units that are under construction or have opened. That has already exceeded the original goal of 1,300. That doesn't include the almost 370 units that will also come online when those three projects close. And close to 400 permanent supportive housing units. So we have exceeded those goals tremendously because of the guidance we've received from you and helping us focus. And when we had opportunities for thinking about the remaining funds, and you've kept us focused on geographic disbursements and diversity, alignment with transportation and other amenities. So we will continue this great work. Just wanted to make kind of use this as an opportunity for some reflection of what the 5.5 years has looked like for all of us, because we are well on track to exceed all the goals. The three projects that Jill identified, we do need to have more conversations with some of our funding partners, notably Oregon Housing and Community Services, on the projects that will need additional competitive funds. There's a lot of partnerships, we're all in the same boat with the state in terms of how our projects are addressing construction and interest rate escalations. And they've been working really closely with Metro, and we wanna ensure that we can also figure out how our projects can benefit from the additional resources that the state legislature have passed. So there's more to come there. We've got, we feel comfortable with how two of the three will come together. We've got more questions on the final third. So we will continue to update you all on that progress. I wanted to also mention briefly, we continue to go through audits. We go through annual audits for the Portland Housing Bond. They're wrapping up that audit right now. It feels like we're always in audits, but we will be able to provide an update at our next quarterly meeting with you. We'll sneak peek. We think that we may have three minor findings. They did say to me, we always have to have findings, Molly, but these are not material. But we will update you all next quarter when we have an actual report to share with you. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Interim Director Molly Rogers.
Question. One final update. Since Monday, we now have our interim deputy director, which is Matthew Shovel.
Thank you very much. I will start with Annalise. Any comments?
No, just no questions or anything. Just thank you, Molly. Really appreciate it, and happy to hear about. Congratulations to you for stepping into this role, and to Matt as well. And we really appreciate your service in this time of transition.
Thank you, Annalise.
Alan.
Yeah, I would echo what Annalise says. Thank you all, Molly, for stepping into this role and for taking the opportunity to guide the team over the next period here, and really appreciate you highlighting the successes that we've seen over the last 5 years, and hopefully that leads to the next set of successes.
And Susan.
I'm delighted that Molly's been appointed as interim director. It gives us a lot of confidence as how we're going to move forward, that it is an incredibly strong team at the Bureau. I also really appreciate Molly's acknowledgement of Shannon's accomplishment and how she got us here and the team she built and some of those that she brought in She was an exceptional leader. In my mind, this bureau is like a model of how government should work. And I say that in other roles. I'm serving now in other committees, rolling out things for Metro. But I think the transparency of the reporting, the collaboration and the collegial effort that it's been in treating us with such respect as Bond Oversight Committee members and just answering every question. And it's just really been a great experience. And I see that experience is going to continue with this team. So I've been very proud to be part of it. As I said at City Council in April, it's the best committee I've ever served on. And I've been doing this work for almost 40 years. So I think that's saying a lot, but you know, I'm really happy to hear about the leadership that's going to continue and all of you and the work you're doing and in very challenging times. I really appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Thanks for your comments. That brings us to the end of our meeting today. And let me just go over a few things and say also to the new team, congratulations for the work. Look forward to what is in front as we continue to do this work together. Appreciate Shannon's leadership and influence and decision making to get this lift into this space. So great opportunity. Our next meeting is October 6th. We were off schedule due to summer and met in August as opposed to July, but we will be getting back on our normal schedule. So the first Thursday in October, we will meet. And I don't know if there's any special information if we will be in person or if it will be hybrid, or is that still being determined?
Thanks, Dr. Holt. I'm not sure. I would assume that we will at least be hybrid. We'll know more once we get closer to October.
And that will be another morning meeting, so a 9:30 meeting. In the meantime, with the rest of the summer days that we have, please enjoy yourself, stay safe, take care of one another, and we'll see each other soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you all.
Thank you.